Subject for a talk right now is suffering or difficulty as a habit and beyond the habit of suffering. And I think most of us will intuitively feel that we're coming to a retreat to repair something, or as a kind of an antidote, meaning trufa neged, the difficulties of life. We somehow see a retreat as a kind of medicine for... And life is full of joys and pains, and our daily life experience is happy, sad, and so on. But underneath, there is, for almost everybody, a sense that life is a struggle. We have to struggle. There is an issue of meaning. Is it really so? Like my grandchildren are kind of looking at the adults there, and say, and I can see in their eyes, you guys working, and then you die. That's life. And so we come to retreat, and we're really, in some way, deeply looking for, you could say, relief, rega shel chesed, some way, place we can be clear about our place in the world. What's the point? What's our relationship with our life and with the world? And we're looking for somewhere that is not just the daily life conditions. That if we're good conditions, we're happy. If they're bad conditions, we're miserable. We go up and down according to conditions, what happens. And we're looking for something else that's not there. And in some way, retreat is like that. It is a kind of antidote. It does offer medicines. We can feel scattered and scattered pizur, mufuzar, and agitated, restless. And we can learn the practice of samadhi. Samadhi meaning concentration, steadiness, quietness. We gather ourselves here. And that is, in a way, an antidote to being scattered and disconnected. Please do give me a sign if you don't hear back there, okay? You need me to talk louder? Okay, it's fair enough. The air conditioning there makes a lot of noise, so I know. We can feel a basic anxiety that is quite subtle and constant in our life. What will be? What will I need to do to make tomorrow better? How I need to fix my life? What might happen? It's a subtle, deep message in the consciousness. And yes, we can learn here an antidote or a medicine for that, which is inner peace, inner quietness, relief from the anxiety. I'm just alive. I'm at peace, there's nothing missing. That's a retreat. That's where we can experience that. We can feel disconnected, and in a retreat we learn empathy. We learn to be close to ourselves, close to the trees, the sky, the soup that we have in the evening. Each other, We can feel that we're all the time out, busy, doing, and we have time to go in. And it's very precious. And it's, again, a kind of a medicine. And in that sense, it's a blessing that it's possible to do such a thing. And it's a blessing, and this is why I've been teaching retreats and sitting retreats for 40 years, because it's such a blessing that it's possible. The word in the Pali language that expresses this blessing is viveka. And viveka means to kind of, in English you say seclusion, but it means kind of withdrawal or finding a safe space where all the pressures of life are a little bit less. And at the same time it has the meaning of paying attention to what is really important. So it has both those, disconnect or withdrawing from what's not so important and paying attention and choosing to pay attention to what is really important. And I think that one word gives a sense of what is a retreat. And conditions, in that sense, are important, because retreat is a condition. It is changing a situation. And so they are important. It's not that they're never important. We choose a retreat, and we choose conditions that are helpful for us. I sometimes think that we forget, and we have a tendency to take on ourselves and blame ourselves for states of mind that are difficult for us, like depression. And we think it's our depression, and I have a problem, and I take Cipralex or whatever medicines for depression. And we forget that maybe the problem is that the world is like that, and I'm actually all right. And it's not me, but it's the world, it's conditions, and I'm okay. But I'm just living in a world that is doing that. So conditions are important. But it's important that we regard retreat as not as an escape from life. And it can be a little too much sometimes that we see a retreat as a kind of a get out, and then we can get addicted to retreats. And it's like being addicted to honey. We'll talk about that in a minute. But so it's important to just be aware that we may kind of build a sense of retreat as being the place where I can find relief and escape from life. So just be aware of that. And what really happens in retreat is that we may come for conditions that are helpful, but we begin to realize that we ourselves have in us the antidote, that the solutions are right here, and we already have them. We live them, but we kind of forgot. And so retreat is a place of memory, of remembering, of waking up. It's the word that Karen just used, of waking up to realize that we actually have the answers, but we're kind of so busy forgetting them and running in life that we just don't, we forgot where to look for them. We have the space, we have the peace, we have the shlemut, completeness. We just forgot where to find it. So the deeper we come to retreat to, in a way, antidote, a medicine, and then we discover in the retreat that we actually are not sick really. We discover or rediscover or remember our deep perfection, our okayness that we forgot. And the Dharma is about truth. The Dharma is the means, the word Dharma means basically truth. And as Krishnamurti said, it's the truth of things that free us, not the effort to be free, not the desire to be free, but the truth that frees us. And sometimes it's been such an amazing experience to work with people that have been very sick or have had very difficult, real deep suffering, and there is a place of turning where you turn to look at the experience, even though it's really, really overwhelming, to look at the experience as truth, and then all of a sudden a huge shift happens from drowning in suffering to a sense of freedom inside pain, because truth frees us, not the desire to be free. And when we do that, part of the freedom is a look again at what put us in prison in the first place. So in other words, the conditions that made our life difficult and the struggle, part of seeing inner freedom is to look again at the conditions. What are they? What are they doing to me? And what am I doing with the conditions of my life? And when we do this, something in us gets bigger, because we become a container where we look at the place in us that's okay, our basic okayness, our basic freedom. We experience it, we remember it, we uncover it, and we look at the conditions as well, what they do to us. And we hold both in our two hands. And if we do that, we just get a bigger person. And we have a big mind. And part of the practice that we're learning here is expanding our mind to be able to notice our freedom that we have and to notice what we do with the kind of problematic conditions of our life. Waking up, Erut, is about being right in the middle of our life, standing right in the middle of our life, not escaping, not running somewhere else, not shutting down, not denying, not closing anything, but standing right in the middle of our life and looking at it, you know, Bhagava Inayam, straight in the face. This is my life, the perfection and the imperfection. Hashleimut v'ha ishleimut. And when we do that, as I say, we hold both, we become bigger. Our mind becomes bigger, our awareness becomes bigger. This is about awareness, the power of now, being right there in the middle of our life. And it's often simple experiences, and that's why some of us that are new to this kind of practice will say, well, look, I came for a spiritual lunar park. I came to get high. And I've just been hearing Karen talking about breathing in, breathing out. That's not very high. But it's exactly the point. Because if we notice what it's like to breathe in and breathe out, then we are standing right in the middle of our life and awake. And from there, everything else follows. Everything else gets clear. If we know how we breathe, how we are, what is a thought, what is a feeling, what is an uncomfortable feeling, and what I do with it, what is a comfortable feeling, what I do with it, what is it like to be in front of a tree, what is it like to eat rice, what is it like to breathe, what is it like to stand between the earth and the sky. That's remembering. And that makes us, as I say, a bigger container holding our life. And that's about waking up. What is it like to be in a body? What's it like to be in a body? It seems a sort of really strange question. I know what it's like to be in a body. But do you know what it's like to be in a body? I mean, nobody asked me if I wanted to have a body. I was dropped into it. It just happened. All of you, everybody, we were just dropped into a body. And we make the best of it. But what is it like to be embodied? It's endless, endless discovery. It's a landscape where we're like exploring the planet. It's as if someone's taking us to Mars or the moon and saying, go and walk there. Because there's places there we just don't even know. It's endless discovery. So instead of the body being a rather boring thing that I don't need to pay attention to it unless it hurts me, I don't need to know that I have a head unless I have a headache. And then I know I have a head. And the rest of my life I can forget that I have a head. It just the body. Never mind, goes on from there. The mind, the spirit, the shama. What is it? How is it? Who am I? Dropped in this body. What is the me that's doing all of these things? It's an amazing journey of discovery. This waking up, this being awake, this being here with our real life as we live it, moment by moment. And just something I want to... the many insights that can come from this, and one of them that just came to me today that I wanted to mention to you, is... one of the places that we discover about our suffering and difficulty that we experience in life, the pains of existence, we can realize they're just a habit. They don't need to be there. It's a habit to suffer. We can't help it. Things happen, such as loss, such as physical pain. Many of you may be already experiencing it. If you're having to sit here, maybe listening to my talk, and your back is hurting. Maybe you're already experiencing, my back is hurting. Ooh. When is it going to shut up? But when we look more carefully at what it is that makes us suffer, we realize that we are caught in a way of responding to life, to guvot, the way we respond to life through pain. And all of a sudden, it's not so bad. The whole thing looks different. We build our life moment by moment. We think it's a kind of given thing that we are like this and life is like that and we end it. And this is what happens, and it's all difficult. We think it's a fact. But actually, we are building ourselves and our life every minute. In a deep sense, this this thing here, this Stephen, is being recreated every moment on the pattern of the moment before. It's just dynamic. Our patterns, our habits, are constantly making life. This is called karma. It's another way of describing karma. Karma is the habit patterns, the energy of habit that keeps going around and around. So the karma would make me still Stephen in 5 minutes, I hope. But only karma. There's no other reason other than the habit energy of karma that would make me keep going like I am. And like a tree, a mango tree will be a mango, and an oak tree will be an oak, because of the habit of being itself, recreating itself. So we create our habits of experiencing life like this. And pain and suffering is, in a sense, a habit. Well, habits are also very beautiful things. Habits can be really beautiful. The habit of the... We all had supper. And thankfully, our stomach has a habit of digesting the food without us having to ask it. Please, please, digest my food. I'm asking just one more time. it just does it. And we have a habit of digesting the food. The sun has a habit of coming up in the morning and going down and going to sleep in the evening. Thank goodness. Life is like that. Karma is like that. Karma is what makes the sun go up in the morning, come up in the morning and go to sleep in the evening. Karma is what makes the food become digested. So we can trust the habits. I think, again, talking personally, if I didn't trust my body and listen to it, I'm sure I wouldn't have arrived at the age of 70. Just can't see how it would have happened. But I trust the habits of the body and listen to the body, and it says thank you. So habits are helpful. But they can be problematic as well. I'm thinking here of a Winnie the Pooh as a nice model of attachment, Herzut, because honey is a beautiful habit. But if you have too much honey, it's a real problem. You get stuck. Winnie the Pooh couldn't get out and couldn't get in. You know the story? He had too much honey. And then he tried to go out of the rabbit house, and he got stuck in the rabbit hole, and he couldn't go in and he couldn't go out. And we feel a little bit like that. We feel stuck with our habits are too much, are too difficult, are too problematic. We get too attached. So there's a problem with too much habit, and we need to kind of see that place of freedom. And then allow things to, allow karma to be what it is. Allow the shape of our being. Allow us to be a person as we are. Allow this thing to be Stephen. Yeah, it's okay. It's not a problem. It's just a habit of karma. Allow things to be what they are. It's not a problem. So we can see the truth of these things, the dynamic in life, the way we build our life, based on the patterns, taking them more lightly, more freely, seeing the truth of the way we are built and we build our life moment by moment, the way our life arises moment by moment, our experiences arise moment by moment. And at the same time, not to take it too seriously. to have some lightness with the whole thing, not to be too heavy about it. So we're exploring the territory of our inner life and our outer life and having some fun on the way. So I wish you a great little weekend retreat, holding conditions on the one hand and our inner perfection on the other hand, samsara and nibbana, two hands, holding both moment by moment and being light. Not eating too much honey and getting stuck. So thank you. So we'll just take a couple of moments of quietness. As we sit quietly, I'd like to quote Hachan Cha and just feel, keep our eyes closed and just feel the wisdom of the words. Hachan Cha is perhaps the major teacher of the line, the lineage that we follow. Do not try to become anything. Do not make yourself into anything. Do not be a meditator. Do not become enlightened. When you sit, let it be. When you walk, let it be. Grasp at nothing. Resist nothing. There are so many techniques to develop samadhi, concentration, and many kinds of meditation. But it all comes back to this. Just let it all be. Step over here to where it is cool, out of the battle. Why not give it a try? Do you dare?